Welcome to Emory Arts Creativity Conversations podcast. This podcast features conversations from the endowed Rosemary McGee Creativity Conversations series. The following conversation is between former Vice President of the University, Rosemary McGee, and Professor and Director of Orchestral Studies, Paul Bassine, in honor of the 20th anniversary of the Schwartz Center for Performing Arts. Enjoy.
Well, here we are. This year is the 20th anniversary of the Donna and Marvin Schwartz Center for Performing Arts. And it's been a real honor and pleasure for me to have been involved in the early dreams and the shaping and the creating of the Schwartz Center. And it turns out now I'm retired from Emory, but still actively engaged. And I live just across the street from the Schwartz Center. So it's really been meaningful to me to see how it has transformed the lives of so many people who've walked in its doors. And I'm just curious about, for you, what your feeling was when you first came here to Emory and when you first experienced the Schwartz Center.
Well, first, Rosemary, let me say that on behalf of the university and the students mm-hmm. and the department and all those who benefit from the Schwartz Center, thank you for your contributions that led to the creation of the Schwartz Center. For me, the first time I walked into the building, I felt jealousy mm-hmm. because at the institution that I was a professor at that time and was coming to Emory for my interview and my on-campus activities, mm-hmm. the first thought I had is, those who get to perform in this space are so fortunate because it is truly a remarkably well-tuned mm-hmm. and neutral acoustic space that feels like a sort of a, the moment I walked in, it felt like a beating heart mm-hmm. of the campus. I'll never forget that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I have a little bit of that feeling every day that I walk into the building.
I share that feeling. I always have that feeling when I come over here, and it's very awe-inspiring to me. And very early on, when the construction of the building was underway, there's a whole story that took place before that, but when it finally was underway, a reporter from the campus newspaper, The Wheel, asked me, like, what are you looking forward to the most? And I said, oh, I'm looking forward most to the surprises, the things that we didn't dream of, the things that we didn't think would ever happen here. And there have been a lot of those. And so that part of it has been pretty thrilling to see that unfold, that we created a space where that could happen.
I think you framed that really well, that I think about all of the creative avenues and all of the various modes of teaching, learning, and music making, and art making, and surprises, to use your word, and how much opportunity there is by virtue of having this space here. Mm-hmm. And it, to me, as a faculty member, walking through the hallways and hearing this sort of simultaneous sounds coming from all sides, going through the different practice room spaces, the performance and rehearsal spaces, it really does feel like a tremendous amount of energy is focused here and sustained throughout the day, throughout the week and the year. And that's what I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to share with you a little bit about the beginnings of the origin story for the Schwartz Center, because with this 20th anniversary, it's a time of reflection and celebration. As you may or may not know, there had been an earlier project that was planned for Emory, an earlier art center that was planned and that was designed. And that process and that design met upon hard times and difficulty and controversy and lack of support. So that the university had invested and individuals had invested a lot of time and energy and also financial resources in that process. I was here at Emory at the time, and I was in the dean's office, the Emory College dean's office, but I was only on the periphery of that process. And but I had a lot of friends who were associated with, and what we had at the time was nothing in terms of buildings at all, or structures. It was pitiful, embarrassing, and much worse than what high school students had at their own high schools. And so I had a conversation with the dean. The decision had been to scrap that plan and put it on a shelf, and if somebody wanted to come along and pay for it, then we'd do it, but otherwise. And I just thought that was not going to happen. And so I had a conversation with the dean, who subsequently had a conversation with the president. And I said, I think I have an idea about how we can bring these different parts and pieces together and rethink it. And I had actually just been to a leadership development program at Harvard, a summer program. And so I'd been thinking about it when I was there. Otherwise, I never even would have had the initiative or courage to do something like that. I just... sort of came upon me, and they said, fine, whatever, you know, we've been through a hard time, do what you can. And so I gathered the chairs of the departments and programs together, and we visited a lot of different college spaces on our own and as a group. And then we decided to figure out what were the elements of it that were most critical and most key. And we put together a plan that I still have a copy of it. It'd be interesting to see it. And my colleague at the time, a close friend, Randy Fullerton, and I put together a PowerPoint. And we shared it with the dean. He said, wow, that's interesting. And then we shared it with the president. He said, maybe okay. And they actually arranged for us to give a presentation for the Board of Trustees, which was completely intimidating, and in order to release some funds to begin the planning. And we hired a local architect to help us just with the early design phases, and it involved some other elements like the performing arts studio and the former Baptist church and studio arts building and some other moves and pieces and parts. And so finally, we were going to New York City. We wanted to present it before Emory alums who had an interest in the arts. And the dean, I gave the presentation to the dean. He gave it back to me. He said, you're going to make this presentation. I said, oh, no, I'm not going to make this presentation. You're going to make this presentation. He said, no, you are. And it was in the home of an Emory alum, Bill Cohen. My friend, your colleague, William Ransom, was with us. He played Fantasy Impromptu. There was a beautiful grand piano there. And the dean, Stephen Sanderson, introduced me. I did the presentation, the PowerPoint. And the next morning, Donna and Marvin Schwartz made the foundational gift for the Schwartz Center.
Amazing.
They were there at that gathering. And that was in the late 1990s. And we just became really highly motivated. It was supposed to be a $35 million project, and they gave this $8 million gift, and the university would pay for half of it if we raised the other half. And we just went all around the country, went all around the city of Atlanta. One of the trustees, Laura Hardman, became our partner in pursuing possibilities. And so then, of course, we went through the process of hiring an architect for it, Michael Dennis, who was an architect who had done work at Carnegie Mellon, which is also a Henry Hornbostel campus. Emory is a Henry Hornbostel campus. He was the original architect. And he traveled all over the world looking at concert hall spaces. We proceeded to hire the acoustician, Kierkegaard and Associates, and also a theater consulting group, Theater Projects. And we went through a long process. We had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of complexity. But we continued to raise money. We continued to move forward with design. We continued to get support on campus. And that all led to the opening 20 years ago.
Incredible.
Yeah. So it was quite a personal pilgrimage for me. It was a campus journey. It was a bonding experience. And I'll just share one more thing about, well, two more things about that. One is our opening act was the New York Philharmonic.
Right. I remember hearing that.
Yes, yes, yes. And so Marvin Schwartz and I have a running discussion about how that all came about, but it was really a wonderful thing. But actually, we had had a concert the week before that was the Emory Symphony Orchestra and the Emory University Chorus, and we also had dance and theater performances. So actually, we focused on the, we wanted to make sure everybody understood this was a teaching space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really quite a remarkable performance that they put forward. And I remember the then and now chair of the music department, Stephen Crist, coming up behind me when I was sitting there at the concert and saying, at that particular concert, the one with the students of the symphony orchestra and the chorus and other events. And he said, what do you think? I said, this is it. You know, this is what we designed this for. So it was great having all of the other fantastic orchestras and concert pianists and others coming through, which is fantastic. I come to these concerts all the time. I felt most satisfied when I saw the students enjoying and learning and growing from the space.
It's wonderful to hear you describe it, having seen it at the very earliest mm-hmm. generative moments and occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what it feels like now as you've seen it and all the different activities over the years. It must feel really rewarding for you to see mm-hmm. it come into its own and be this destination in the entire region.
It does. It does. It feels like it's the concert hall feels like it's a music box to me. And you open up the music box and you never quite know what music is going to be played before you. And along the way, I learned just enough about acoustics to be not really dangerous, but not fully informed. But I understood the process of tuning the hall. And so it's interesting to see, you know, how that still goes in on now and how it can be adapted for special circumstances. And in fact, when we were nearing completion, we had a tuning the hall gathering where we invited people from all across the campus to come and to just show up and sit in seats while we had, you know, a rehearsal going on and while the acoustician was there and where we could make adjustments. And so we did it with a lot of people. We did it with just a few people. We did it with people who had their coats on. So all the different ways in which people might dress and interact in the space. And then one of the things I really like is that we wanted to create a crossroads and connections, as you mentioned earlier, with the students and the different sounds. And so just earlier today, right before this, I was in the corridor and I saw students coming out of the theater lab, some people going into the dance lab. I saw students coming out of the different parts of the corridors and rooms and interacting. And I thought, yes, that's another place where surprises can happen.
I couldn't agree more. I sometimes when I think about the role of a center for the performing arts on an academic campus, I think about how Emory has worked really, really hard to situate the performing arts as equal members with our other colleagues and other disciplines across the campus, equal members, equal seats at the table, so to speak, where we're not only transmitting knowledge through rehearsal and through teaching the arts here, but we're creating it.
Right.
With every original interpretation, with every original presentation of something new. I feel that Emory has embraced this in a way that is really exciting and inspiring for me, because with the development of the concert series, with the academic programs, mm-hmm. with the flourishing of all these different sort of pillars mm-hmm. of this arts temple, I feel that we have really succeeded in this 20th anniversary in helping not just the students, but the community understand mm-hmm. that making art is creating knowledge. And that's one of our main charges here mm-hmm. at the university.
Yeah, I've been interested to see that there are pieces that have been commissioned for performance here. Some of the pieces are the works of our own faculty that have been performed here first. We currently in the theater department is working on a play that is focusing on a modern interpretation of Medea. Mm. And so that's very innovative, creative, and the Emory Dance Company will be performing their student concert coming up in the coming weeks. And then I know I want to hear what you have on tap for now, the close of the semester. And I also want to note that when Anna Sophie Mutter was here, she played some pieces that had been commissioned for her and that had their premieres here at the Short Center. The next night, she was going to Carnegie Hall, and she had a very similar program. But that particular night was when the premiere occurred, the opening.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was great. It's very thrilling.
These presentations of new works are part of an important part mm-hmm. of the story. One of the things that we also situate in the sort of the central work that we do in the Schwartz Center is also collaborative mm-hmm. activity across some of these different arts disciplines, and some also sciences and humanities. It's really this idea of making new things and sharing them in front of a live audience. Sometimes in the academic space, I laugh with the students because I ask them, how many other final exams do you have are in front of a live audience?
Right.
And thinking about the end of our season, which comes to a close next week, this is also the 100th anniversary of the University Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we wanted to mark that occasion, along with the 20th anniversary of the Schwartz Center, was to commission composers whose work, perhaps, and whose voices are not heard as often in terms of the canon mm-hmm. compositionally. So we have a program supported by the Schwartz Center, Artist in Residence Program, where for 3 years we've been calling for composers to send compositions, composers of color, women composers, mm-hmm. who from that collection of applicants, we choose one every year to premiere their work. And so that will be taking place next weekend on April 22nd and April 23rd. Our composer this year is Sofia Rocha, and her music is for a very large orchestra with antiphonal percussion.
Wow.
And some really extraordinary spatial separation between the instruments of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. And the students have really enjoyed working directly with her for the purposes of fine-tuning and developing an interpretation for something that no one has ever heard yet. And that work is accompanied by, of course, the great Karl Orff choral orchestral work, Carmina Burana. Mm-hmm. And Eric Nelson, my colleague here, the choral studies director, will be sharing the podium. One of us conducts each night.
Well, what a thrilling experience for the students, for the campus, and I can imagine that it is for you as well.
It is. It is. I enjoy these collaborations at the end of all seasons, especially special ones like this one, because I don't often get to lead the university chorus. It's not a daily affair, but the choral program and the symphony orchestra program, we have developed a real esprit de corps between the two areas. And when we all come together for the final week of rehearsals, it's like old friends. Mm-hmm. And we share our desire and the anticipation and the enthusiasm of doing this in front of this audience.
Well, I agree with you that was one of the dreams that we had, that kind of interaction, that kind of collaboration that kind of shared spirit would be inspired and nurtured by this structure and all the elements of it. You mentioned collaborations between science and art. Mm. And you know, I'm sure, and others know, that the concert hall is named after Cherry Logan Emerson.
Yes.
And you may know that there's another building on campus, across campus, also named after Cherry Emerson. Mm-hmm. It's a chemistry building. And Cherry Emerson was a Renaissance man. I had the pleasure of knowing him. He was a true supporter of both the chemistry department at Emory, and he had come to Emory in the, I'm going to have to check the dates on all this, but he was an Emory alum. He had studied chemistry, and he had studied music. And he believed that these two entities should not be separate, they should not be in competition, but they should be in collaboration. And some of his favorite stories were talking about going to the Boston Symphony. Mm. After he was at Emory, he went to MIT and then lived in that New England, Boston area for a long time. And I believe he met his wife at a Boston Symphony Orchestra performance. So Cherry was a real inspiration in terms of thinking that the sciences and the arts should be in active interplay. And he has supported both those departments in other ways. And then, of course, him having his name associated with the Short Center was meaningful for him and for us.
Well, I'm sure that there would also be a chuckle mm-hmm. on his part to know that when new students come to campus,
yeah.
they oftentimes go to the...
they won't go the wrong place.
It's the chemistry building yes. instead of the concert hall for their first rehearsal. And so that's a sort of geographic matter that the students always laugh to themselves when they finally figure out that there's actually another place where music actually happens.
Yeah, I'm sure they're wondering, where is it we're going to play
right,
our instruments?
Right. But that's a remarkable confluence.
It is. And just a word or two more about Donna and Marvin Schwartz. After their initial gift and their support for Emory and for the concert hall, they have continued to give in other ways, including the Schwartz residency program,
right.
where artists come and not only perform, but also spend time with students and faculty in conversation and discussion. And I think that's been a really quite remarkable element. And Donna Schwartz was an Emory College graduate, studied art in one of these buildings that was a former ROTC building. It was more like a shack than a building, and that was mm-hmm. when she was here. And so you can imagine that it was still there when her daughter came here to Emory. And then when her son came, she's thinking, this is not right. That's why I think when we did that presentation in New York, she immediately jumped for it. And Marvin Schwartz is really supported his entire family through the Emory experience and being a part of it and continuing to be a generous benefactor. And we're so grateful for their trust in us, because it becomes a relationship of trust between the donor, the benefactor, and the programs and projects that come out of it. And as you know, I think when they were here earlier in the month, they really especially enjoyed the opportunity to talk with some of us and attend that concert.
Well, and it was our special treat to be able to have them as guests during one of our rehearsals.
Yes, very nice.
We were preparing Enigma Variations by Elgar, and mm-hmm. I think there was a special energy in the air that day we were rehearsing, because the students knew that whether it's through the residency programs, mm-hmm. the guest artists, the special collaborative efforts that are supported through a lot of these contributions that the Schwartzes have made, and the building itself. Mm-hmm. It's not an exaggeration to say that students choose to make their college careers here because of these opportunities and because of how distinctive they are and how unusual they are at liberal arts research universities. Because many of our students, just thinking about this idea of trust, many of them are looking for ways to engage with art making, but within a liberal arts context. And it's difficult for universities, I think, especially based on current conversations happening about the arts and humanities generally, it's difficult to find a balance between helping provide really substantive, meaningful, challenging, enriching students, student experiences, while simultaneously allowing enough room for students to explore all the other arts, humanities, sciences. And Emory has found a way to do it by virtue of these very special contributions that the Schwartzes have made. And it has literally made the difference in students' lives in terms of how they make the decision on where they want to make their college life. And they choose Emory for those very reasons. And I am very grateful to them for that, but also to the students themselves for fulfilling some of that trust that's been placed in the institution.
Absolutely, and carrying it on. And I really have thought a lot about, we thought a lot about this in the process of developing the plan and the construction and the fundraising for this building, because we wanted people to know we saw it as part of the Emory College for Arts and Sciences program, curriculum. It's not, Emory does not have a separate School of Music or School of the Arts. And there are lots of benefits to that approach, and there are benefits to the approach that we have continued to take. And one of those benefits to the approach we continue to take is that they are studying chemistry at the same time they're studying music. They are studying history at the same time that they're studying history, a theater. Mm-hmm. They are studying dance at the same time as they're pursuing a degree in religion. And that really brings a further strength to their academic work and also to their artistic talent as well. So I've been really pleased that you and others on the faculty have continued to strengthen those relationships, to be engaged with the broad culture of the liberal arts curriculum here at Emory, because I think it super benefits our students and the entire campus.
I couldn't agree more. When I talk to my colleagues in these departments that you're describing, one of the things that motivates us, but also really defines the work that we do here, is that we know that students who are attending Emory, who have these artistic ambitions, artistic goals, they could have just as easily gone to conservatories where they would be focusing on a pre-professional vocational course of study that prepares them for a trade, dance or art making or music, whatever it may be. But what we try to do here is create a home for them, not just to explore and to have a sort of counterbalance to their other science and humanities courses, but rather to engage really rigorously in the arts in a way that doesn't feel like a compromise when compared to the vocational programs. And that requires building programs around that central philosophy that you can have depth, substance, rigor, and even high levels of risk-taking with some of these disciplinary endeavors, projects, courses, without necessarily sacrificing the comprehensive education that's central to a liberal arts degree.
And I know at times you've also had students from the business school and students who were also headed to medical school, a lot of students headed to medical school, or even occasionally some of the medical school students have participated in the Emory ensembles.
Yes.
Which you can imagine would be, you know, an enormous challenge. But I think, and we've had these other collaborations across campus, And I think another thing to note is that one thing we all wanted to happen is that Emory would be a player, so to speak, in the broader arts community in Atlanta, and that there have been fantastic collaborations. I know that the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, which has also performed here to great acclaim, but many members of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra are artist affiliates here at Emory, teach our students.
That's right.
So there's lots of opportunities for collaboration there, and also with the other theater companies and dance companies as well. So I like the fact that Emory has this strength in the broader community, and that it's become known over these 20 years as a place where art is happening.
Oh, you couldn't be more right. Thinking back just to a couple examples of that, one of my first collaborative projects on campus was with Theater Emory, and with theater faculty and professional performers doing a semi-stage production of Steinbeck's The Red Pony with music by Aaron Copland.
Lovely.
With live Theater Emory, who also happened to be faculty here at Emory, these live actors performing the Steinbeck with Copland's music behind them. I think the students realized right away, and the audience realized, this is not a sort of an everyday university activity. And then shortly after, we also did a fully staged musical with, in collaboration with the dance program and Theater Emory again. Tim McDonough, John Ammerman, George Stabe, all these wonderful collaborators, faculty here on campus were involved. And then most recently, these Atlanta Symphony musicians you mentioned, this July, the University Symphony Orchestra is releasing an album, a full-length album, featuring those Atlanta Symphony principal musicians as soloists on rarely recorded concertos for solo instrument and orchestra.
Wow.
And so these are things that really can only happen at an institution that values not just collaboration, but also partnering with professional entities in the region for the benefit of the community, but also for the students. And this is what I think helps provide some really concrete evidence of how the Schwartz Center has changed the arts landscape here.
Yes, and you also mentioned that that artists and students, we've already talked about, artists, faculty members, performers from other places want to come here and be here. So let's talk a little bit about what we see as possibilities for the future in terms of the Schwartz Center. What are some of the ideas that you've had? What are some of the things that you've heard other faculty members talk about? Or concerns or dreams that students themselves might have?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. It's an exciting time for the college with it's hard to call him new because he's been here a little while, but our relatively new provost, Bellum Conda, has a really clearly articulated vision for how the arts student experience and research on campus come together to make something very unique, very Atlanta-focused, and really memorable for prospective and current members of our community. And a lot of that, I think, is going to really gain momentum with the arrival of our next dean of Emory College, which they would begin their tenure this coming academic year. And recently, the provost has been having a lot of conversations about how we can enhance this student experience with respect to the arts, with respect to research. And those of us in the performing arts faculty here who make our home in the Schwartz Center have been spending a lot of time thinking about how this makes an impact on our areas. So those conversations that I've been having have centered on the student side of things, the academic side of things, maintaining this level of rigor, the challenging and probing work that we're doing, creating new works, finding original interpretations of existing works, but also thinking about new ways to grant students access and flexibility to what we offer. So whether it's the Arts and Social Justice Program, which Associate Dean Carnes has, and all of the great staff in his office who are helping to bring those fellowship programs to life every year. We're looking to try to bring new perspectives to how art makes an impact in daily society and how a university, especially an urban university, can play an important role in advancing that. So whether that means finding ways to reinvent courses in the arts by collaborating with non-artists. For example, this past year, through that Arts and Social Justice Fellowship Program, we collaborated with the archivist and curator, Sierra King, to find ways of bringing the symphony orchestra out into very non-traditional urban performance spaces, like laundromats or barbershops or street corners, places where communities might not normally hear classical music, but the music is being made by students. And other ideas that these conversations have been bringing up are ways of partnering more formally with some of these Atlanta-based institutions and bringing some of the work of the symphony and the opera and the ballet more closely intertwined with what we're doing here on campus. Some of the challenges, I think, that we're facing are there's anxiety in the country today. And students are feeling a lot of pressure and burden when it comes to making college choices and how they will reconcile the challenges of affording a college education, of advancing through a highly selective school's course of study, becoming employed. And one of the things that we have to really focus on, I think, in the arts is trying to connect students to their professional ambitions when they graduate, so they can see the power of the arts and the humanities and how they translate to success when they are through with their time here. So just to give you an example of that, this is a pretty typical year for us, at least in my own area in music, where we have some students going to professional graduate school in music, a place like the Cleveland Institute of Music. We have some students going on to fellowship programs for purely academic research purposes. We have some students who have been offered jobs with places like the New York Philharmonic. And to me, that is the sort of primary obligation that I think that many of us feel right now, which is how do we provide flexibility, access, and some really new ways of thinking about how the arts make an impact in society while simultaneously preparing students for their professional lives when they are no longer here?
Well, that approach seems to be really a particularly fine, appropriate, timely one for Emory, because we have so many students who come here with so many different kinds of talents. And we often have, in the past, failed to acknowledge that you can pursue one particular talent and also another field of study and find that they enhance one another.
That's right.
You can benefit from both of those ways of thinking, of being, of studying, of learning, of growing. And so to acknowledge that connection and to see it as a foundation that can lead them to a path in the world that they'll always be able to draw upon, rather than to ignore that, you know, and let students kind of struggle with that themselves, rather give them opportunities and spaces and new ways of thinking about it.
That's right. That's right. And I and my colleagues here in these arts departments, I think that they would agree that this concept of an obligation, it goes deeper than the curricular considerations, because we want the students to be technically, artistically, academically prepared to be capable. But we also want them to be ethical. And that is central to our work here. Going back to some of these ideas of these non-traditional partnerships, bringing in underrepresented voices, making connections to creators whose voices should be heard. But then we also need to remember that students need, apart from the artistic capability and the academic capability and the ethics of what they're doing, they need to be entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. And so we've worked really hard to carve out spaces for students to make their own way and their own projects, some of them for credit, but some of them not for credit. And we want to give students a long, ample runway to experience their own entrepreneurial challenges, successes, and sometimes healthy failures, mm-hmm. because this is the time in their life where they can make those investments. And so I think that if we can continue to strike that balance between those three areas, then we'll continue to fulfill that mm-hmm. central charge, I think, of what we've all embraced.
And there'll be more surprises.
For certain.
So let me ask you this question as our conversation comes to a close. And that is, when you prepare to enter the concert hall at a performance where your students have already assembled and have taken their place and are themselves preparing and the audience is already there, what is it that you tell yourself? What is it you feel? What is it that your aspiration is at that moment, after all the rehearsals, after all this very deep thinking about what we're trying to accomplish, how to accomplish it? What is it that you do to make that transformation into that performance, which is unpredictable? As much mm-hmm. as you've practiced for it, new things will unfold.
What a wonderful question. In the professional world, there's usually two or three rehearsals and then four or five concerts in the symphony space usually. But in the academic world, there's 12 rehearsals and just one performance. So if we are trying to teach students how to be orchestral performers, for example, how to develop nonverbal communication, to be sensitive to one another, to embrace other musical viewpoints in real time, and to engage in a dialogue in real time in front of an audience. What I think about right before I take the stage is hope that the investments we made nonverbally in rehearsal has given the students the freedom and the power to take a risk on stage and see if all of that work and all of that investment can be transformed into something original and lasting. And often, sometimes, imperfect in a beautiful way. Because when you only have one concert after all those rehearsals, you don't get a second chance. No. There's only one opportunity. So I don't want students to be paralyzed by self-doubt or concern for perfection. I want them to let go of those thoughts and try to let all of these reflexive habits that we've developed in rehearsal to just speak for themselves, whatever may come. And to me, that music making is more beautiful and more lasting and more capable of connecting with the audience than the highly proscribed and rigid performance that might emphasize perfection over all else.
It feels to me, as I've observed, attended, listened, that kind of work does speak to the audience. So the audience becomes part of the process,
yes.
part of the learning and teaching and engaged process. And one of the things with the acoustics we wanted to make sure would happen with the Emerson Concert Hall in the Schwartz Center was that the musicians could hear one another. Mm. You know, because I've been to performances and I've attended symphony performances and in halls and very elite orchestras, and that it turns out that in some of those spaces the musicians, the way it's designed, have a hard time hearing one another as musicians.
Oh yes.
Which becomes a kind of metaphor, so that if our students are in a space where they can hear one another and be responding to one another, to hear the music that's coming not only from their own instrument, but the other instruments, and responding to the conductor and then to the entire audience. We have a very organic flow that is occurring. And so when you're there in the concert hall, whether you're a performer or conductor or audience member, and when you leave it, you've participated in something very special, just as you described.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Sometimes students have told me that they feel the nonverbal connections that you make in a rehearsal. It's sort of a form of academic artistic democracy. Mm-hmm. And I think you put it very well, that is hearing one another on stage in a well-tuned hall is a very special experience for someone who's learning how to make those connections with one another without necessarily speaking about them, but just showing and telling and expressing them.
Well, I want to thank you, Paul, for engaging in this conversation and also for the tremendous work that you're doing. And I'm looking forward to these upcoming concerts and continuing this conversation in a variety of corridors and meeting rooms and lobbies, what have you. I feel like we will continue to be in conversation with one another and with other people who are part of this tremendous enterprise and the generous supporters who have made sure that this kind of experience is available to our students.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Creativity Conversations podcast. You can find out more about arts on the Emory campus by visiting arts.emory.edu or following us on Instagram @EmoryArts.